Hello, everyone. We are back for Blue Valley's podcast. I am your host and Superintendent Todd White. And today we are talking about safety and security, something that certainly is dear to all of us as we leave our children or grandchildren at school every day and pick them up. We certainly want them to be safe and secure. And so today we have our guest is the Executive Director of Safety and Security for the Blue Valley Schools, Mr. Dan Carney. Welcome, Dan.
Hi. Thanks for letting me be involved in this. This is I've heard about it, but I've never
You've heard about podcasts?
Yeah, Toddcast, right?
Well, yeah. So welcome to the Toddcast, and we're glad to have you here. And more importantly, we're glad that we have someone that has had the years of experience that you have had in law enforcement and being around schools and children to really kind of look out for our safety and security measures on a daily basis. So why don't we start with tell our listeners a little bit about your background and how you came to Blue Valley.
Well, I worked for the Overland Park Police Department for 26 years, did a variety of things there. But the two things that sort of plugged into schools were, if you remember, the DARE program. Mm-hmm. I was given the opportunity to start the DARE program in Overland Park, and this goes back to 1988. But I did that for a couple of years, which took me into a lot of schools, including Blue Valley schools back then. And then my career kind of took a different turn, went into investigations, those sorts of things, but eventually came back to the school resource officer unit as a supervisor. And so I spent a number of years in that capacity and really enjoyed it. And so when the position opened up here at Blue Valley, the Director of Safety and Security, it felt like a pretty natural transition.
Sure.
Now, I had to fight for the job, but I was lucky, and I still, 7.5 years later, consider myself very blessed to have gotten this job and to do what I'm doing here.
It's a real blessing. We are thrilled that you came through that fight, as you call it, but I have really come to appreciate your expertise and your knowledge in this area of safety and security. And, you know, safety and security has certainly, you know, grown in its, paramount importance for all of us because of things that have certainly happened over the years in other schools and just dreadful and awful things that have happened. But, you know, in Blue Valley, we, I think, take somewhat of a unique approach to safety and security. And so why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about our fundamental beliefs about safety and security and how that work is done through our schools?
Okay. Well, you know, it's interesting. If you turn on the news and there's a story around school safety, school security, maybe a new upgrade that a district is doing, something that's improving safety and security, it almost always is around something physical, mm-hmm. always some kind of physical improvement. When there has been a school shooting that's captured everyone's attention, the recommendations that people make to improve security are almost always around something physical. Our strategy really in Blue Valley starts with something that I think is a lot more fundamental, a lot more foundational, and is in the arena of prevention first. We'd rather not ever get to that point where we have to deal with something as horrific as a school shooting. So we start with building trusted relationships with kids in our buildings. And people might say, well, what does that have to do with safety?
Yeah.
When you really start to look at these incidents, these horrible, violent incidents, you find out that the vast majority of those are perpetrated not by intruders from the outside of the building, but by students who are already in the building. And so the first thing you do is turn your attention to the students as your first order of business, and you say, what can we do to prevent these things from happening in our schools? And the studies that have been done, most importantly, probably the one done by the Secret Service, showed us that the students who have perpetrated these acts of violence have shared, prior to the act, they've shared that information with other students.
Sure, they talk about it, right?
They talk about
sure.
it. And then that the problem was that that information never made it to an adult in those cases. So if you just look at that, if you just isolate that finding by itself, it prompts the obvious question of what can we do to bridge that gap? What can we do to get students talking to adults? And it's not really anything difficult. It's obvious that, well, we need to open up and really work on those relationships between adults and students in the building so that students will come to us when they're feeling bad, if they're feeling suicidal, if they're just depressed, whatever it might be, that they have someone that they can go to that they can trust and talk to in the building. Also, if they are aware of someone else who's feeling those same feelings or maybe having homicidal thoughts, if they're having violent thoughts of doing harm to others in the building, that they'll come. Someone will come and tell us. They'll come and tell a trusted adult. We've seen that play out. It's hard to gather up stats when you're talking about crime prevention.
Sure,
it's hard to gather up stats because the things didn't happen. There's nothing to count, really.
Right. It was the avoidance of the occurrence, right?
That's right. So what we can do, though, is we can look at anecdotal cases where someone came to us and we were able to intervene.
So I think the point that we want to emphasize here is that the foundation to our safety and security program is the foundation of our educational program, which means that we build relationships with kids. And we do that so that certainly we can extend their learning, but as you've described, we do that so that kids feel a measure of safety, and when they feel as though that something is imposing on that in some way as a threat, either them or someone else, that they can go to a trusted adult who they formed a relationship with and speak to them, either to receive help for themselves or someone else. And I think that that is just so critical as we continue to work on safety and also on increasing student achievement and certainly student success, is that when we speak about the work, it's a singular point. We're keeping kids safe and we're educating them because we're building relationships. Mm-hmm. And I appreciate the fact that you've brought that to us as a safety measure, but I think it cannot be overstated as we talk to our parents and our public that is really our first measure of safety, being very proactive, is making sure that we hire the right people, we put them in places where they can build positive results for kids. And I know that we've seen some really good results from that, right? So talk just a little bit about these anecdotal pieces of evidence, and I know that you're instrumental in bringing us the TIPS hotline, and so talk a little bit about that as well.
Yeah, the TIPS hotline people, first of all, they're wonderful, and they offered us what we call a TIPS app for teens. We know young people using their phones, they don't make phone calls by and large, at least that's my experience, but they do text.
That's true. We have to text them to come to dinner.
Yeah, they text. Yeah, so they so this is an app that they put on their phones, and we encourage and we try to market that out to the students to put it on their phones, and they can anonymously text a tip, and it goes straight to the TIPS hotline, which is monitored 24/7 by live police officer operators.
So is this like the same TIPS hotline that we might see, you know, in the newscast where they say call the...
It's the same group.
Okay.
It's the same group, and they're just experts at dealing with these kind of... These pieces of information that come in that sometimes are at a crisis level and many times they're not. But it affords our kids the opportunity to anonymously send information in, let it be kind of triaged and assorted out, and then it comes back to administrators, police officers that work in the buildings. Or if it's something that's an immediate crisis, then it may go straight to a police department that can respond immediately. And that did happen not too long ago when a young man posted a suicide note online. I can't remember if it was Snapchat, Instagram, one of those. Mm-hmm. And a couple of our students used the TIPS app to submit that they had seen this, right, and they were concerned about this young man. By doing that, they basically set the wheels in motion to have the police department contacted. The police department responded to the boy's house, and it was at nighttime. They woke up the mom, and the intervention, in the mom's words, saved her son's life.
Oh my gosh! Fantastic.
But there's been many examples in the not just with the TIPS app. The TIPS app has been wonderful, and we get things that are not as serious. Sometimes we'll get a report of there's vaping going on somewhere in the building.
Sure. So it's really an opportunity for kids, when they see something, they can say something.
That's right.
And it can be anonymous.
That's
and
right.
It's at the tip of their fingers.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be a threat of suicide or homicide. It can be something that's less, but something that they're concerned about, that
sure.
worries them,
exactly.
And they, again, don't want to make a phone call. But this is sort of complementary. This TIPS app is really complementary to our first order of business, and that's to open up these relationships with adults in the building so that they'll just come to us. That's the simpler method, is to have a student go to an adult in the building that they trust and say, hey, I need to talk to you about something. This is really worrying me. And I always think back to that the situation where a young lady at one of our high schools contacted an adult in the building that she trusted, a teacher, and told her that there was a boy that was texting her about killing himself with a knife. And he was in the building, in class, and he was texting her about killing himself with a knife. And as the texting went on and she was trying to convince him not to do that, he started talking about using the knife on some other kids in the building first. And she went right to the teacher she trusted. And when I spoke with her, she was in tears, very upset about the whole matter. And over time, as we talked, I came to find out that one of the reasons she was so upset was she was afraid about losing her relationship with this boy. She was worried about him hurting himself and hurting others, but she ultimately was worried about the relationship that she had damaged, but she still went to that adult and told them. She knew, you know, the most important thing to these young people is their peer relationships.
Right, exactly.
And she set that aside and went to an adult because she trusted this teacher to tell them. And we were able to bring the boy out of class. He didn't have a knife, as it turned out. We ultimately don't think he intended to hurt anybody, but maybe was just trying to work on her sympathies. But it was a nice example of someone, a student, overcoming, you know, those fears and concerns because a teacher had bothered to make a really great relationship with her, which is just wonderful.
It's impactful every day. And the truth is we really don't know when those opportunities to develop that sort of relationship and for it to be meaningful to the extent that it could literally save someone's life. But I just can't brag on our staff enough that they are of such high quality and care so much about not necessarily their work, but the human element of that. They really connect to our kids, and they connect to one another. And I think that's what makes Blue Valley a very special place, is that relationship piece. And again, not to overemphasize, but certainly to make sure that we continue letting people know that building relationships is the way that we keep kids safe, but it's the best way for us to educate our children as well. So we really appreciate that. You know, I know that over the past year or so, Dan, that you have led a task force to kind of review some of our safety procedures and some of the things that, you know, technology changes all the time, and there are some advancements of things that we can do to better keep our buildings safe. And so why don't you talk just a little bit about some of the things that you and your team have continued to review and some of the things that we've implemented as a result of that work?
One of the probably most visible changes that we've made, and I think now I'm sure most of our parents are well aware of it, is we implemented what I started off calling a secure access system, but then when no one knew what that was, we changed it to the buzzer system.
There you go. Everybody understands the
Everybody knows system. What buzzer system is. You walk up to a school building and the doors are locked, and you push the doorbell button or whatever you want to call it, and then The administrative assistant inside the building will ask you if they can help you. You explain why you're there, and you show them your government-issued photo ID so that they make sure you are who you say you are. Mm-hmm. And then if everything's good, you're allowed in the building. I said earlier that most of the violent actions that have occurred in school buildings are perpetrated by students who are already in the building. But there is a percentage of situations that have occurred because an outside intruder has shown up at a building. And we also know, and I know from personal experience, that you might have someone who's intoxicated show up for a building, just want to use the bathroom. But that's not a safe situation for our kids to let someone who's intoxicated come in and use a restroom. So there's, again, we always tend to go to the extreme when we think about the school shooter. But there are other things that there are other people who could come along, someone who's mentally ill, a non-custodial parent who's angry, an ex-boyfriend who's angry with a teacher. Exactly. So there's a lot of things that could happen. So it is a good idea to have a more secure access to our school buildings. And that's what we moved to. We moved to this buzzer system. And we said this right when we started talking about putting them in, is that we can't get complacent with them. This can't be a situation where you hear the bell, you open the door. You hear the bell, you open the door. And that's why we've built
talking
in
about our staff.
Our staff, yeah. Because we know that that has occurred in other places where it just becomes so routine that it no longer really is serving its function. So that's why we built in this sort of protocol that is followed. And even if you are the PTO president that visits the building
on a daily basis,
once a day, you're still being asked to go through this procedure. And this really isn't as much about you as the PTO president. It is about our staff making sure that they follow this protocol every time. Make sure we're doing it every time. So the one time it really matters, we don't miss it.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I make it a habit of myself making sure that I use it as well. And I know some of our staff probably think that I'm checking on to see if they're using the protocol. But I do think it's important that we follow that protocol, even ourselves. And I know when I come in and out of buildings, there's a lot of parents there that see that happen. And, you know, so if you will, even the superintendent, you know, must show the government-issued ID and follow the procedure because it's just important. And, you know, I think the other thing that maybe, you know, parents don't necessarily realize unless you're at a door of a building and particularly, I was going to say our elementaries, but particularly around lunchtime, we have a lot of moms and visitors and grandmas and grandpas, and certainly we want them to be in the building and have lunch and share that social time with their children or grandchildren. But we also have a lot of other visitors that come in and out of our buildings. And so really to add this additional layer of ensuring that you have the right purpose of being there and you say you are who you are, I think is important. It's how would you characterize it being received by our parents and our public?
You know, we started off wondering, will this be just a monumental inconvenience and people might be angry? And it's like, you know me, for heaven's sakes. Why are you asking for my ID? And what we found was that the vast majority of people, parents, visitors, were appreciative and actually would go to the trouble, sometimes have to go back to their car to get their driver's license, but wouldn't complain about it and would say, hey, thanks for doing this. This makes me feel better about who you're letting in and out of this building. I don't know if you were going to ask me this or not, but it occurred to me while we were talking.
I will ask you that. Tell me what to ask.
Okay, so ask me, have we added any SROs or any officers to our staff?
Dan, have we added any SROs to our staff lately?
Because I was really excited about this, too.
This is totally unscripted, by the way.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. So last year, if you'd asked me how many, what do we have in terms of police officers in our schools, I would have said, well, we have full-time police officers in high schools, we have half-time officers in middle schools, and we don't have any officers in elementary schools. So now what we've done is we've moved to having a full-time police presence in our middle schools, which was a pretty huge upgrade, both in terms of just the coverage and the financial commitment to do that is a pretty big step. But it gives us full-time police coverage in both of those. And then these middle school officers know that their feeder elementary schools, that they have kind of a direct channel to those elementary schools. They can be called to those schools. They should go out and visit, kind of get to know the staff. In addition to that, we took a campus police officer that used to work at night, and we moved them into a position to be operationally concerned with elementary schools all the time. So 8 hours a day, this officer is tuned into the elementary schools. He's on speed dial for every elementary school principal. Mm-hmm. And so if you have a principal, for example, who's concerned because there's been a truck out in the parking lot with a guy sitting behind the wheel and the engine running for a few hours, right, you're going to see our officer there to find out what's going on.
Yeah.
So,
well, I really appreciate you reminding me to ask you that question, because I do think that was a huge commitment on the part of our board, and we're so thankful for the opportunity to add those, because it kind of goes back to the relationships we talked about. Here we have the opportunity to deepen relationships because we have officers in the building more often connecting with students, and then the ability to have that feeder connection, which I think is awesome for us, because then they get to know the elementary students as they come into middle school. And so it's kudos to you and your staff for advocating for that. And the other thing that I'll say here is that we're often asked, or I am, why does it, cost so much, if you will, to provide, school funding today as opposed to, a decade ago? Certainly inflationary costs and those sorts of things are a part of that. But these are the costs of ensuring safe learning environments today. And I think it's important for our listeners to know that we take great care in ensuring that, and take great pride in making sure that we do it as best we can. But at the end of the day, it requires resources. It requires people so that we can build those relationships and we can make sure, in this case, that we have safe learning environments. And technology can only do so much, right? We have to have a human element to this, eyes on, people that can react in appropriate ways. And so it costs. And so when people ask, what are you doing with your school funding? We say we're putting it in resources that make kids safe and that we can provide the best learning environments possible.
Yeah, that's right. And it's not cheap.
No.
It's not cheap, especially if you do it right.
Right.
And that's what we always try to do. And we try to base it upon strong historical data that points us toward that item or system or protocol that we should put in place. There are vendors now. This school safety stuff has become big business, right, in the United States. Right. They say multi-billion-dollar business, selling things to try to, in an effort to make schools safer. What we find is that there's a lot of it that has not been proven effective, it really doesn't relate to anything that is occurring or has occurred. Mm-hmm. And so we shy away from that stuff. We try to make sure that what we put in place is going to be effective. We look at the impact it's going to have on the culture, and probably the last thing we look at is how much it's going to cost.
Right, right.
Yeah,
absolutely.
So, yeah.
Another change that our parents might have seen this past year is that a new state statute a year ago required drills in the increased number of drills. Can you talk a little bit about how we've managed that, and again, trying to make sure that it's meaningful and it doesn't become, sort of rote protocol for us, that we ensure we have the proper training and drills for our staff and our students?
Yeah, up until last year, the protocol was a fire drill every month, and then I think three tornado drills a year. And then we had, the state wasn't requiring anything in this category, but we did these lockdown drills. And we did four things a year. I say things because two of them always had to be lockdown, lights out drills, and the other two items, or whatever you want to call them, could be that, or they could be training scenarios with kids, or it could just be a presentation.
Some flexibility based upon what the building needed.
And, that's right.
Yeah,
that's
nuances.
Right. Yeah. So that was kind of our protocol. When the state came out with this new requirement that we do 9 crisis drills mm-hmm. a year, we felt like we were a little bit ahead of the game, but it was interesting to be faced with 9 of these drills. That's quite a large number. So what we did was we looked at all the different kinds of crises that we might encounter. And just to give you an example, we could have a situation where there's been a bank robbery close to one of our buildings, and the fugitives are running from the scene. And we know from the information we're receiving that they're running towards one of our schools. And so what we want to make sure of in that case is that all kids related to that school are inside the building and that the building is completely secured. Right. That's different than a lockdown, lights out scenario.
Right. Right.
So we said, okay, we're going to practice that one. That'll be one of our crisis drills. Mm-hmm. And so most of the students may not even know that drill is occurring when it occurs.
Correct.
Right? Right. And but what the school would do is say we're going into a secure entry. Make sure all kids are inside, and then they'd have their staff go around and check every single door that goes to the outside to make sure that they're secure. You know, if the students that are in math class, they may never know that even happened. But that's our practice, our chance to go through that protocol and do it. So that's been good. I understand the state now has either they're on the verge of or they have decided to cut back on some of those. I don't know if we will or not.
Yeah.
We're doing pretty good.
I would agree with you, and that's part of the reason why I brought it up, is because I do think that the state may provide a little leeway, if you will, in that. But from my vantage point, both as a school administrator and a grandfather of children in the district, I appreciate the fact that we have our sights kind of set on those drills. And as you say, sometimes our students don't even know that a drill is being, you know, practiced, if you will. But it's important for us to ensure that we've got the protocols and the procedures in place that when and if that and the scenario that you described has happened. It
yes.
happened this year.
Yeah, it does happen.
So,
that's right.
You know, it's important for us to do these things. Well, Dan, I've really appreciated you coming by and giving us a wealth of knowledge and a good conversation regarding safety. We could continue to go on and on, talk about various things, but I know that our listeners are either getting ready to walk in the door from a day of work, or they're getting ready to walk into work if they've arrived. And so we always end our podcast with 3 questions that we ask our guests. And so the first one is with regards to school safety and our safety and security procedures here in the district. What are some of the things, just 1 or 2 things that you believe that are just really good practices and things that we want to continue to do?
Well, every time that comes up, I think of this business of building trusted adult relationships. It's hard for me not to go there. We've already talked about it, so I don't need to expand on it. But I think that there's always room for improvement there, always, on building better relationships in schools. And I think if we keep doing that, we are on the right track in terms of violence prevention, as well as a great education.
Yeah, right.
You know,
yeah.
So it just works hand in hand. It's fantastic.
Great.
I think that's the most important.
Good. So second question is as you consider and kind of scan the landscape of safety and security procedures and things that are happening, research that's coming out and those sorts of things, what's a couple of things that you think that we're pondering or that we should kind of take a look at, start doing?
One thing that I think that we should definitely, and we have, set our sights on is to improve our ability to alert the students and staff in our buildings when there is a crisis situation. Sometimes I think we could do better with our PA systems, mm-hmm. make them more effective, make them reach more parts of the building that maybe they're not as easily to hear, and then maybe create a visual alerting system to go hand in hand with that. And we're looking at it, and I think it would be a real upgrade for our schools, huge upgrade.
Yeah, and, you know, the technology has advanced to a point now where it makes it much better for us to be able to notify our students and staff. And that's honestly one of the things we're looking at for our upcoming bond issue, is to take a look at doing that. Great. So the last question, and usually the most difficult for people to answer, is there something that we should probably stop doing, or something that we should consider stop doing in relationship to safety and security?
Well, the way I would like to answer that is to pretend like you asked me that question 6 months ago.
Okay.
And what I would say that we've got to stop doing is we need to not give so little attention to vaping. That's what I would have said. That I felt like we were sort of just, you know, we knew it was there. We were
kind of keeping it at arm's length, if you will.
Keeping it at arm's length. Maybe if a student was caught with vaping materials, then, you know, it might considered sort of like catching them with a cigarette.
Right.
So 6 months ago, I would have said, we've got to do something here. And so now when you ask me the question, I can sit here and say, you know what's great? We are doing something. We're really making great strides, and I know that we've recently put this Aspire program into play from MD Anderson, which is not just punitive. It's the effort is to educate kids and get them really thinking about the consequences and what's involved in using these materials that are just abhorrently dangerous to young people.
And it is
an epidemic. And so I kind of took probably the easy way out answering your question. But that, to me, is the most important thing.
Well, I appreciate the fact that you recognized some of the things that certainly you've been a part of that in helping us address and understand the seriousness and the epidemic of vaping, which it absolutely is. And, I really appreciate what we're doing with the Aspire program. It's well-researched, comes from MD Anderson. But it's not only for the students, but for the parents, because really educating all of us on how vaping works and how it's transmitted, and these devices now, I mean, they replicate a key fob and a USB and those sort of things. So it's very, very difficult for us to detect. But boy, is it something that has what appears to be some really long-lasting, devastating effects on the health of kids. And I was with Chris Jensen on Tuesday night as he presented at Hilltop. By the way, there was probably almost 250 of 275 people there. On a night in the spring with everything else that we have going on, but they made the attempt to come out there. Chris, of course, being an MD and also one of our teachers, provided just awesome information. But this popcorn lung just scared the life out of me about how, you know, devastating it is and long lasting, because it's not something you get over. You can't take a pill. And, you know, one of these cartridges of nicotine is like, you know, a pack of cigarettes. I mean, that's just, it's amazing. And of course, there's other illicit drugs now that are coming on the market and, again, being purposefully marketed to kids in that regard. So that might be an upcoming podcast as we continue.
Oh, you should get Chris in here.
Yeah, well.
Boy, that was wonderful.
Yeah, he was awesome. So, and we'll put some information on our website for that presentation, but also the information, the Aspire program. And finally, we want to say, Dan, thanks very much for joining us today. Great information. Appreciate you being here every day. And again, just really want to thank you for approaching school safety as a relationship issue that helps us educate not only ourselves, our students, our community, but keeps us all safe as well. So thanks very much.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
All right. Thank you very much for listening to our latest edition of the Toddcast. And make sure that you're listening next time, because we will continue our conversation about school safety, but take a look at it from a school building level. Talk to a principal and possibly some teachers. So more information to come. Thanks again for listening. and go out and make it a BV best day.